Listen to the voices of our world.
Most people who go to Darfur and see with their own eyes what is happening call it genocide.
There is day-to-day persecution of civilians going on now.
The invisibility derives from a moral devaluing of African lives.
The people who are after the land are still burning down villages.
We are going to see many, many tens of thousands of people die in the coming months.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. In the glaring light of hindsight, United States presidents have apologized for abuse and mass slaughter perpetrated against Native Americans. President Lyndon Baines Johnson publicly decried the immorality of slavery and pressed for the 1964 civil rights legislation that would begin to reverse more than a century of massive racial injustice. Pope John Paul II began the process of making contrition for the Church's part in many centuries of anti-Semitism. Along with Belgian and French heads of state, President Bill Clinton apologized for failure to heed the urgent warnings of United Nations Force Commander Romeo Dallaire, thus allowing more than 800,000 Rwandans to be massacred. So while today we certainly have our own worries and compassion fatigue is understandable, and sincere apologies are called for, we need to ask, isn't it far better to actively prevent a Holocaust than to apologize later for moral passivity? In the cause of the people of Darfur, Sudan, today we'll speak with the East Africa Coordinator for Human Rights Watch, Jamera Roan, Eric Reeves of the Divest Sudan campaign, and Mary Knoll's sister, Teresa Baldini.
Auschwitz, Dachau, Bergen-Belsen.
Never again.
Hiroshima, Nagasaki.
Never again.
The killing fields of Cambodia, East Timor.
Never again.
Kosovo, Srebrenica.
Never again.
Little Bighorn, Wounded Knee.
Never again.
El Mozote, La Quesera.
Never again.
Rwanda.
Never again.
Darfur, Sudan.
Near the town of Tuwila, a man named Sharif Yahya told a reporter,
I had to dig up my family. Janjaweed had come and killed them. We buried them and ran away. But we came back at the wrong time, and the Janjaweed came back and told us to dig up all the graves. I don't know why. I think just to make it worse. We had to dig up bodies, look at them, and then put them back in the earth, just to show that they could make it worse.
The people of northwest Sudan, the Darfur region, are dying at the rate of about 500 persons a day. Their villages burned, their wells stuffed with rubble or bodies, in what the United Nations calls the worst humanitarian crisis in the world today. The Sudanese army and the Janjaweed, a militia financed by the Khartoum government in a scorched earth policy to remove the people of Darfur, have killed, it's estimated, about 400,000 people. A case of genocide has already been put before the International Criminal Court, and President Omar al-Bashir has allowed the African Union to intervene. But they are currently just some 2,200 in number, under-experienced and under-equipped. Everyone is on the run, and there are now 2.5 million displaced Sudanese in Darfur alone. Producer Kathy Golden talks with the East Africa Coordinator for Human Rights Watch, Jamera Roan. Welcome to the show, Jamera.
Thank you very much.
I, just a few days ago, had two Mary Knoll sisters here in the radio studio that have spent 20 years in southern Sudan. And they were talking to me about the things that they'd witnessed for years down there now happening to Darfur, sort of a change in focus as far as the Khartoum government goes and the flybys and the strafing and things that they've experienced, they say, is happening now in Darfur.
I was in Darfur just a few months ago, and I agree totally with what your people are saying. We found that the strategy that's been used in Darfur is just almost exactly the same thing as the government did in the south. Only in Darfur, they're doing it much more rapidly than they ever did in the south. What they've done in the south for the 20 and more years of war has been a campaign of forced displacement, scorched earth, targeting civilians, burning their homes, forcing them off of the land. In the south, part of the fight was because there was oil underneath the land where these civilians lived. They went after civilians because they considered them somehow of the same ethnic origin as the rebels and therefore part and parcel of the rebels. So they have failed totally to distinguish between civilians and military targets in the south, and they've done the same thing in Darfur. And the Sudan government, what they have done in Darfur and also done in the south, has been to allow ethnic groups to have militias, work with them, help them, arm them, back them up with air power, coordinate joint troop movements with them, allow them to do whatever they wanted to do, commit any crime they wanted to commit, particularly looting and killing. And these ethnic groups, as a reward for their loyalty to the government, would be able to enrich themselves, taking or using the land that they were pushing people off of. Now, this has happened in the south over a period of more than 20 years, and now the same tactics have been applied in Darfur by the Sudanese government, and it's the same modus operandi. There is day-to-day persecution of civilians going on now because no one has been prosecuted, and the Sudan government hasn't tried to stop anybody from doing anything. The people who are after the land are still burning down villages or burning a little bit of village that may have been reconstructed. Whenever they think people are going to try to go back and claim their land and set up their lives again in an ordinary fashion. So no one has been told by Khartoum that they've got to cut this out and go back to where they came from and give the land that they've taken back to the people who have been producing crops on it for many generations.
Throwing political correctness to the winds, a reporter for NBC TV actually had the audacity to put a rhetorical question out there, posed to fellow broadcast journalists. Are we more likely to publicize the disappearance of a missing white woman, as with the pretty blonde Alabama teen Natalie Holloway, or pregnant Californian Lacey Peterson, than we are to publicize any of the thousands of black or Hispanic women who go missing in this country each year? And we all know the answer is yes. Of course, the why part of that question is even harder to address. When rape and massacre were happening in the former Yugoslavia, when ethnic cleansing became synonymous with Kosovo, NATO snapped to attention fairly quickly. The victims were European. No such intervention stopped the genocide in Rwanda just 5 years prior. The victims were African. Until a peace accord was signed in January 2005, the Arabic north of Sudan had been at war for 21 years with southern, mostly Christian and animist Sudan. That was actually the second phase of a civil war that began shortly after Sudan gained independence in 1956. Over time, 3 million southern Sudanese were killed and 5 million were internally displaced. The same terror that wasted the south is now happening in the north. Why is Darfur getting a little more timely global attention? Maybe we're getting tired of banal and belated apologies? 6.5 years ago, English professor at Smith College, Eric Reeves, was having a conversation regarding strife in Sudan with then-executive director of Doctors Without Borders, Joelle Tanguay. That conversation led Reeves to a multi-year sabbatical from Smith, the writing of many op-ed pieces for The Washington Post, LA Times, The Christian Science Monitor, and countless radio and TV interviews, all in the hope of focusing global pressure against the genocide in Darfur. Kathy speaks with Eric Reeves.
The numbers are staggering indeed, and yet there's so little known here in the United States. Why do you feel that there's so little said about it here?
Well, I think it would be important to say that Darfur has received more attention in many ways than the North-South conflict, and that's an encouraging sign. But there's still an invisibility to the crisis in Darfur as there was in southern Sudan. 6.5 years ago, a journalist by the name of William Finnegan published a piece in The New Yorker called The Invisible War, and it was all too apt a title. And I think what we must accept is that the invisibility derives from a moral devaluing of African lives. We can measure this in any number of ways: humanitarian dollars per person, aid per refugee, diplomatic resources expended, or in news coverage accorded. And there is, in the ways in which the news media have only fitfully and inadequately recorded the vast genocidal destruction in Darfur, there's an implicit discounting of African lives. I can't think of any other place on earth where this many lives destroyed in this genocidal fashion would not produce greater news coverage.
I was counting in my heart and my head on the fact that you would say what you just said. It's very important that we think about that.
Well, it's deeply true. It's scandalously, shamefully, but deeply true. What Darfur requires is not what Jan Egeland, the head of UN Humanitarian Operations, has called a humanitarian band-aid. We need to provide an international humanitarian intervention which will protect vulnerable civilians as well as acutely vulnerable humanitarian operations. If we don't do that, we are acquiescing in the violence that Khartoum continues to sustain by means of the Janjaweed proxy militias, by means of its own regular forces, by means of the popular defense forces, by means of its security apparatus within the camps. The African Union cannot do this. It, for all its best efforts, does not have the resources or the manpower to address the security concerns that we see every day in Darfur. And to pretend that the African Union has resources is really a kind of dishonesty. It's a refusal to say what must be done, what is truly required. It's a willingness to use the African leaf as a kind of fig leaf for our own inaction.
And so how do you see the most recent events? Give me your take, please, on Mr. Garang's death.
Well, I think it creates a moment of acute danger in Sudan. I think Salva Kiir, his successor, is quite inexperienced diplomatically and politically by comparison. He's collegial, he's popular with many within the SPLM, but he simply doesn't have the diplomatic or political experience, the knowledge of the international community, connections with the international community, or regional leaders, those in Egypt, for example, who are deeply opposed to southern self-determination. I think Salva Kiir, with his secessionist viewpoint well known, is going to have a very difficult time dealing with the Egyptians. I think to the extent that international diplomatic resources are devoted to bolstering the comprehensive peace agreement, North-South peace agreement, that will translate into a diminished effort to hold Khartoum accountable for the ongoing genocide by attrition, as I would call it, in Darfur. Salva Kiir will have almost no influence on policies in Khartoum that have to do with so-called northern issues, including genocide in Darfur and foreign policy generally. I think he will be tested very, very severely by Khartoum in the coming weeks and months.
And Eric, tell me what you think Condi Rice was attempting to accomplish just weeks ago.
Well, it's not entirely clear. I think the Bush administration wants to send a signal that it is actively concerned about Darfur. It was, after all, President Bush who scrawled in the margins of a report on the Rwandan genocide, "Not on my watch." Well, his own former Secretary of State, Colin Powell, declared unambiguously in September before the United States Senate last year that what is occurring in Darfur is genocide, and those responsible include the National Islamic Front and the Janjaweed. Well, a year later, the genocide continues.
Can an average Joe's interest raise pressure against the government of Sudan? Email us. Go to www.maryknoll.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.